I'm your host, Rena Friedman Watts, and this is the Better Call Daddy Show.
Hey, this is Big Daddy, Wayne Friedman.
That's my grandpa. Grandpa, you ready for more daddy drama?
My dad is my number one hero and number one fan.
And I'm a pretty cool dude.
All right, season four, baby, here we go.
More stories you're not going to believe.
And maybe you will after you listen.
5 stars.
5.5 stars, 2 thumbs up.
You are a pretty cool dude.
Love you, Mommy.
Don't stand on the table and damn the public. You'll get some words of wisdom to live by.
Here we go again. Better call Daddy.
You know what your problem is? You like me.
Yeah, I do. Each week, I interview a guest, share the stories with my dad, and then he weighs in at the end of every episode with his wisdom and wit.
Hey, Grandpa.
Everyone from influential players to inspirational fathers and, of course, controversial people.
Grandpa, my mom is calling.
Creating that legacy one call at a time. And welcome to the Better Call Daddy Show.
Stay tuned.
Where's the music?
Better call Daddy because he knows you best. Better call Daddy because he's bringing the test. He sees possibilities. Better call Daddy, you're the apple of his eye. He sees possibilities. All to agree.
My dad says it's not easy to make it in life. Even if you raise $96 million in capital, you can still be cut from a team. Startups have to be responsible with the money that they spend if they want to make it to the finish line. Today's guest, Faris Al-Halu, has worked with entrepreneurs for the past 10 years. He's coached 1 to 2 people per week. That's hundreds of entrepreneurs that he's coached. He's an author, speaker, and YouTuber. Faris, welcome to the Better Call Daddy Show. So I know that layoffs is one of the topics that you really get vulnerable on. And we are in layoff season right now. A lot of people are going through that. Talk to me about what it was like when you moved to Silicon Valley 20 years ago with stars in your eyes.
Yeah, 2003, I still vividly remember that whole season. So I was in a tech startup. I was a VP at the time, and we had raised $96 million as a startup. I was part of the management team who raised that amount, and we were building an infrastructure product. We basically ran out of money, so there were waves of layoffs. And then I remember to this day, the CEO, new CEO, came into my office and said, "Hey, Faris, we have a layoff tomorrow." I guessed it would be, but what I didn't know, what he said next was, "And Faris, you're part of it. You're impacted by that layoff." And Rena, I remember like my stomach dropping, heart racing, these emotions going through my heart, my mind, my body. I'm a VP in this startup. This is a startup that you hear about in the books. We were working 67 hours a week, 12, 14 hour days. I slept in that company a couple times there to support the engineers as they're working overnight. So that was shocking, to say the least. And why me? No way it's me. What happened? What do I tell my family? What do I tell my friends? All of that is just rushing through your mind. And I remember it was in 2003, 21 years ago now.
But even before that, like, talk a little bit too about you were managing like 50 people, and what was it like to raise that kind of capital and be a part of that scene?
Yeah. So I worked with the founders in a previous company, and then they recruited me to come in and help grow the business. We were hiring, I think we hired like 60 people in one summer. This is, you know, cash was there. The investors believed in the concept, and then they want us to, just like any other investor, to execute, deliver. And we did. The product was amazing. It was ahead of its time. And we were working with clients like Cox Communication, AT&T, and others. But just the product was ahead of its time. And then at one point, when you're burning that much cash, you'll run out of money. And that, you know, that's a lesson for founders, for, you know, new business owners, is if you have cash, you know, be very diligent in how you spend it. And, you know, be very conservative in where you apply the cash and how you invest in resources to get you some revenue, maybe before you expand too much. So it was going from the high of highs to the the low of lows and having to deal with it. It was at the professional level, at the personal level. Yeah, it was a tough period.
Yeah, on a personal level, you were a dad at the time with a new young family, right?
Yeah, young family. My wife at the time, we have three children and they're young. And my wife was, she took a hit on her career early on to take care of the kids. And then now she's an amazing professional and she does amazing work and all that good stuff. We can talk about it later in the podcast. I remember going back home that afternoon. So I'd come home 7 a.m., 8 p.m. You know, we'd have maybe late dinner. But that day when I was told I was laid off, I came home early and my wife said, "What's going on?" I said, "Let me tell you what's going on." And she had the same sort of shock. "No way. Like you've been working so hard and you know the founders." And I said, "It is what it is. It's business." She was very supportive, of course. Said, "Hey, we'll figure things out. Don't worry about it." And then, you know, you start to internalize all of this and all these questions about, and the feelings about maybe shame. I mean, what do you tell others? What do you tell your kids? You know, I already told my wife, she's very supportive. And then what do I do? And, you know, it's not cheap to live in Silicon Valley and raise three children. So all of that, I think the first couple of days were really hard, very, very difficult. But then you realize that life throws a lot of things at you and you just have to, you have to do the work. You have to take care of business. I have a family. So start, you know, updating my resume, talking to people, you know, wrapped up a few things at work. The management team, they were very professional and they're very supportive in terms of, they allowed me to continue to work for a few weeks after actually the layoff to help wrap things up. You know, I was a VP and we were about to install a big system at the time. So that was good. You know, got a little bit, you know, a little bit of cash from the company after the layoff and supporting on a consulting basis. But I immediately started to send resumes out and I was in a very difficult market. Very dry, similar to what we're hearing these days about the waves of layoffs, not just in tech. Every day you see announcements about another company just laying people off. Expedia, BuzzFeed, Vice, you name it. So those listeners who maybe are impacted or they know someone in their network is impacted, it's hard. You know, let that shock settle for a little bit. Assess what happened. Assess what you're good at. Assess what needs improvement. And then you just got to go, you got to get back on your feet and just knock on doors. Not easy, but you got to do it. The great thing is that when you're laid off is you have a lot of time. So
all this time you didn't know that you had.
Exactly. And hopefully if you have some severance, so you have a bit of a runway, then you can maybe just take a little bit of time. What do I want to do next? Do I want to stay in the same career? Maybe I want to do something different. I want to maybe relocate, or maybe I want to start my own business. So take the time, I think, and mourn. It's okay. For the men listening out there, it's okay to cry. If you can cry in front of people at night by yourself, let those emotions flow. And it's hard. It's hard on us. So that's okay. But you can't be in that phase of mourning or in that just stuck in, oh my God, why did they pick on me? Oh my God, they're this or they're that, and start blaming others. No, you know, it's just behind us now. Let's see what you can do going forward.
What did you want to do next? Were there ideas of things that you had dreamed of doing? You're like, maybe now's the time to write that sci-fi novel.
Well, I don't know. We ended up writing a book 10 years later, maybe 15 years later. But no, at the time, I think like most Americans, I think 60% of us, we have an idea to start a business. I think only, if I remember correctly, only 90% actually do. So I always said, yeah, I want to have my own business. I want to do this. I want to do that. But when you have a major life event like a layoff, you have the time to think and reflect. But I wasn't thinking about entrepreneurship like right after I get laid off. Because again, the young children, I think we get used to the stability or perceived stability in my mind now. Well, yeah, we have a paycheck. We have benefits. We have 401k plans and all that. But I ran, you know, after 6-7 weeks, no interviews, nothing. I ran into a friend of mine who wanted to start a business. And I said, okay, that's interesting. And he was a close friend. And that was the dawn of internet marketing and SEO and pay-per-click and all of that and web design. So we decided to join hands and start a business. And that's how I got into it. So in a way, I don't want to take all the credit of, yeah, I started my own business and I had the vision. It was sort of I wanted to do it, but then my network, my friend, IDN has some resources. So we combined our resources and our time and effort, and we decided to start the business. So that was, and I think about 3 months after the layoff, that's when we officially kicked it off and started to go out and try to sell and got a whole lot of rejections. That's another story.
Oh, I want to hear about that.
I always say this story. So the first day we decided to actually go out and sell. So where do we start? Where do we start? I figured the people who know us, the people who take our money, restaurants, you know, small local restaurants around us where we frequent, right? So we got to 5 restaurants, okay? And we got 5 rejections. No one wanted to do anything with online websites, online marketing. This is 2003, so this stuff was new. And we got home. It was devastating. Like, oh my God, what did we do? Was this the right thing? Like, no one is going to buy from us. So another shock to the system, another period of mourning for a couple of days. But by that time, we had put some time and effort into the name and the paperwork and said, no, we got to keep going. So it took us a few weeks to get the first customer. And that was the sweetest feeling ever when you close that deal, because I didn't have any sales background. So I had also to learn a bit about, you know, how to pitch and how to package and how to price and how to handle objections. So there's a bit of learning there. But once you start to close deals and deliver to the customers, especially if you like services and you like to work with people and help them out, it was an amazing feeling. Once we figured it out, it took us a little bit of time. But once we figured it out, you know, we doubled down and, you know, fortunately we were able to grow the business and pivot and start another business and all the way to, you know, to selling the last company we had to Dentsu, the global media company, back in 2019.
I want to know, like, when you walked into the restaurant, did you buy a cheeseburger first? And then you're like, hey, and by the way.
We had 5 meals. I was nervous because, so I don't know what the analogy would be today. Let's say I walk into, pick up the phone and call you, Rena, and say, hey, I want to sell you this ChatGPT such and such and such. Like something around, like this is, right? Like something about AI and Gen AI, and I package it. That's online marketing at the time. Like Yahoo and Google, they had the systems, and we as consultants, we would go and talk to business owners about, hey, we want to get you leads and customers through the internet. That was very new. So I don't know how to start that discussion. So we would go and have a meal. And then when we go to pay, because we knew the owners, like they're very small restaurants right here. One of them is it's called Athena Grill, still right here in Santa Clara. They're doing really well. And they ended up being a client just a few months down the road, right? So we would have the meal, and then I guess sheeply I would go in to pay and say, oh, by the way, we started a business and we help bring traffic. And they say, like, website, online marketing? No, no, this is for big companies. Oh, we're too small. No, 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 I don't believe in this. Like, those are the rejections we were getting. So yeah, I had 5 meals. We had to pay money and no one bought. So, but we learned, you know?
At least you went to places you already liked the food.
Yeah, that was one good thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, my husband wanted to get a gift card for his parents for their anniversary. And he asked them what was the name of the store or the place that they love to eat. And then they didn't even have it where you could purchase the gift card on their website. Like, you had to go to the physical location, and they're like an hour and a half drive from us. So my husband thought about reaching out to that restaurant and being like, hey, you really need to be able to purchase a gift card from your website.
Yeah, I mean, especially these days, you can help, you know, their takeout. A lot of small businesses to date, you know, the big buzzword is digital transformation. If big company, but even a local business, look at ways to automate. I think look, and that's what I, when I speak with founders, that's what I tell them. You can come in. If you want to start a business, look at pain points. If someone is not getting orders, or like customers can't buy gift cards or what have you, you can come in as a consultant and offer the service to help these small businesses automate and use technology to get, you know, to get more customers.
So how do you start that conversation though? Do you say, hey, like, I'm willing to spend $150. I want to get my in-laws a gift card, but I'm not going to drive an hour and a half. Who would be in charge? Like, yeah. How do you start that conversation?
You know, a business idea is about solving a problem. So if you experience that problem, then others probably have also experienced that problem. And then I think when you speak with the business owner, I wouldn't get into the technical part of it and the feature. Like, here's my friend, I was about to spend $150 with you and I can't imagine how many other people. So potentially you can get, and maybe share some numbers. If you get 10 customers a month, that's $1,500. Now for $200 a month, I can help you set up that system. So I think to business owners, you want to, how do I help you solve a problem? How I can increase your revenue? How can I decrease your cost, make things a bit more efficient? I think and talk business with decision makers, not maybe too much about the features and the technology and those sort of things.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. I mean, even I went to the urgent care this week, and every time you go to the urgent care, you have to enter the same information through an app. And I'm like, there should be part of this. I mean, I get that you don't want to like store maybe my license photo or my payment, because that probably needs to be updated every time. But my address, my allergies, like all this stuff. And even the nurses are annoyed. They're like, I know, it's annoying. It's the people we work for. I'm like, who are the people you work for? My husband could fix that.
I was speaking with a friend of mine. He's in Canada. And the Canadian government, I don't know if this program is still active or not, but they have this thing called digital adoption and digital transformation, where they give businesses who help other businesses adopt technology and get on the 2024 train. And they give you a certain amount of money, maybe $15,000, I think Canadian dollars. So that's a pretty sizable amount to help businesses automate and really innovate and allow, you know, technology to help business owners succeed. So because I speak with a lot of founders and a lot of business owners, they maybe want to pivot, like look for these issues in a specific industry, maybe in healthcare, maybe in restaurants. There's a lot of room for innovation. And even if you're not a technical person, you're not a programmer, potentially you could find a software, a solution that will solve the problem. And then you'll be the consultant training a business owner on that solution. You can maybe customize, you can provide training on. So there's a lot of opportunities to help businesses, even if you're not technical, because you can just maybe provide services around that technology.
Yeah, I love that. I also am very surprised that you went 6 to 7 weeks and didn't get an interview. So were you like still applying and networking? Like, talk to me about that period, because I think, you know, obviously if you're not getting interviews, then you've got to be like, okay, well, I got to come up with something.
Absolutely. Because, you know, cash will
goes quick.
Yes.
Stock options go quick.
Well, the joke about the stock option, the options we had, because we did have a whole lot at that startup, but then the joke in Silicon Valley is that all that becomes toilet paper because you can't do anything with it, right? I don't know. When we were hiring people, before I get to your question, people would come and negotiate, okay, here's the base salary and the options, right? And people would take a hit on their base salary to get more options because of the potential upside, which, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Now, if the company doesn't make it, and the failure rate in startups is really high, so yeah, those options end up being really worthless. But I think, especially if you have young listeners, I think in that early stage of your career, if you get a chance to work really hard in a startup, or if you're in your family business or a local restaurant, it doesn't have to be tech. It doesn't have to be Silicon Valley. But I think for young professionals, young folks, built to that momentum you build when you work hard, you can accomplish more. It gives you a lot of tools. And I think it also, and I heard this from Sam Altman, the founder of ChatGPT, you know, OpenAI. He said, just like you have compounding interest, that really well for you over time, same thing if you work really hard early on. You don't have as many obligations, typically, generally, you don't have as many obligations as when you get older. So that compounds your trajectory, I think, your career, where you end up. That working hard early on, I think, is very valuable. It's something I recommend. You know, you have to sacrifice some things, maybe one less hobby, maybe a little bit less TV time, one less, you know, party, whatever it is. But initially, that knowledge you acquire and just how life works and how business works, like that, you want to be a sponge and you want to learn a lot early on. It will set you apart significantly in a good way, I think, especially early on, maybe the first few years of your career. So,
and you did that. I mean, you said you slept in the office.
Oh, that startup. I learned, and I know I had worked in corporate before that, but that environment, working in this, a lot of smart people around us, working really hard, high expectations from management, from the venture capitalist. You just learn how to do things with less. Sometimes even money was available, but because we had funding, but it's still a startup, small team. So, you know, you're the head of product and you're helping sales and you're helping maybe installing something. I remember before a demo, we had some venture capitalists coming in to see a demo of the product. And we had a demo room that looked really nice. And we had to demo the feature. And the engineers were working on the software. And then we had to make sure that the room is tidy. And I remember, you know, being there at night, making sure everything looks nice. And I have a little scar here on, we were moving things and I got cut from getting that room set up. I wasn't a programmer at that time, but I couldn't go back home when the engineers are actually staying overnight to make sure this demo is going to work for the investor in the morning. This is, I'm not making this stuff up. So, you know, I was there and, you know, there was no help. There was no Uber at the time. There was no TaskRabbit at the time. So we had to do our things ourselves. And the demo went amazingly well the next day. And investors were happy and they wrote the check. So that, all that is experience you're not going to get from working 8 to 5. So, and I understand the whole thing about work-life balance, but I think for the younger crowd and the older crowd, if you want to accomplish something worthwhile in life, whatever it is, you want to run a marathon, you want to build an amazing business, it's not easy. Easy is evil. I just heard that. I like this.
In fact, it's dangerous. If you work at a startup, you could get cut.
So there is time, obviously, for relationships, for your significant other, for your children, for your wife, for a hobby, be physically fit. But something, you have to give something up, maybe again, less leisure time. And then that maybe one season in your life where you work really, really hard, and maybe a couple of years down the road, you can slow down. So that, I think that's really important is if you want, sometimes you can't really, you want to work really hard, but you have personal commitments, you have aging parents, you have a sick child, you have someone in your family that they need your support, you have other obligations. What I always tell entrepreneurs, just know what you want. If you want to grow, and you want to grow and become a millionaire, multimillionaire, whatever, grow a 7 or an 8-figure business, it takes a lot of time. There are no shortcuts. And just be mindful of that and set up your life around it and make sure everybody in your sphere are on the same page. Because if at home, you and your spouse are not on the same page that, you know, you're expected to be at home doing things and then you're out there working 12 hours a day, that could create problems at home. So you have to kind of know what you want and get a support system around you to help you get there.
I know that you said a lot of people helped you along the way, and that's even part of your mission right now. Can you talk about some of the people that you called for advice?
Long list, Rena, a long list across the spectrum. So when we started the first business, I had no idea about accounting, no idea whatsoever. I never dealt with accounting because I was in tech and all that. So we spoke with a couple of business owners and they told us about, here's what you got to do. And here's a couple of CPAs to work with. Problem solved. Lawyers, I had a business partner. So how do we set up a partnership agreement? And he was a friend. He was a close, and he's still a friend 20 plus years later, proud of that friendship. But we need to have a partnership agreement. What if I decided to move on? What if he decided to move on? What happens if one of us is hit by lightning? Like, so we had an attorney. Again, attorneys are expensive. I don't have money to hire an attorney. Another friend of mine said, you got to spend money on an attorney to make sure the partnership agreement is documented, is there. You both agree what happens. What if, what if, what if? So just reaching out to people in your network, I think you have access to a lot of free advice, good advice. You know, people, you want to be careful. Not everybody who speaks well and speaks confidently know what they're talking about. So make sure you reach out to people who have, they've tasted success, they've demonstrated the ability to build businesses, grow businesses, and they've gone a similar path to yours, and get advice from them. Again, that's just in business, but you know, you always want to learn, expedite your learning through advisors and coaches and others, whether it's a formal program and coaching or just reaching out to people to help you in the area that you need help in.
What about even family? Do you look to family members or successful people in your family for advice, or do you separate that?
I don't talk about work at home at all. Like, this is huge wall. So I come home, even if I had the worst day before I had my own businesses, I think you want to talk to people who can help you. I had a rough day today and things were not going well. But if I start to kind of gossip about, well, she said this and he said that and he did this, like my wife is, I mean, she can't help, you know, but I do if I had a rough day today and obviously listen. So I think you learn, at least in my mind, you learn different things from different people. So I train in martial arts, in Aikido. I'm a third degree black belt. I've been doing this for a while. So in terms of discipline, we have four Aikido teachers in our dojo, in our school. And they're all amazing martial artists, and they've been doing this for a long time. And it's fascinating to me. They all practice the same art from the same sort of lineage, same teacher. But each one of them, they're just unique in the way they perform a technique and also in their personal life and their way they exhibit discipline. Martial arts requires a lot of discipline, whatever the art is. So I learned in terms of discipline and respecting the tradition and their time-tested principles, like I learned a lot from those teachers. From family members, that's your question. I mean, in terms of kindness and listening, my wife is amazing at that. Like, she's the kindest person. And we're fortunate to have been married for now 36 years.
Beautiful. So,
and, you know, we obviously, like every other couple, you know, we've gone through the ups and downs. And it took us a while to really understand each other. But learning how to listen, how to, you know, when you have a significant other, a spouse, you know, in your life, after the first, you know, well, you know that they have different perspectives on things. So you have to live with it initially. Okay, I don't agree, but I'm going to be nice. But over time, you appreciate that there's a different perspective. And then when you have children and they're growing up and you think they don't know what they're talking about, but then they also have different perspectives because they have different experiences. And, you know, my wife works really hard. When she was a teacher, she's a social worker now. When she was a teacher, she was the first teacher, you know, at her school, like 6:30 in the morning, she's there. And I said, are you like competing with this other teacher who also comes in early? But she's really diligent. She loved what she did. And she loves what she does in general. So even I work really hard as well, but also showing, seeing a life partner who is also committed to their, you know, profession and taking care. I'm taking care of my customers. She's taking care of the students. So that, you know, you learn from the people that you surround yourself with. And, you know, I heard a quote recently, forgot who said it, but if you want to know where you will be in 5 years, examine the five people you surround yourself with today and the five books you're reading today. So that's really important.
What are you reading?
I do a lot of audiobooks. So my goal is to do a book a week. And I end up doing, I get like 70% of that target. But I think 1 year I got to 52. I cheat like the last couple of weeks of the year, like big, small books, you know? Learning is really important to me. And I just finished one on startups. It's called, not a very nice title, How to F Up Your Startup. So I don't like these kind of titles, but the book, it's a good book. And a very successful entrepreneur from, he's Danish. So really good book with a lot of research base, not just opinion. And I'm also, I was another book I recently read was, this has been on my list for a long time, about blue ocean strategy. This is more when there's a lot of competitors like sharks, it's red ocean, a lot of blood. So he said, always find a new place where you can differentiate and you can have a period of time where it's blue ocean, no one else is there fighting you for the customers. So that was more applicable to big companies. And I'm trying to, how do I apply this to my own ventures now? And you know, when I advise other business owners, how do you apply those concepts? So there's always something you learn from people, from books. You know, we live in such a polarized time where I don't agree with this politician or I don't agree with this cause. And it's like they're evil. I think that's just awful for the country. It's awful for us. I think you should be able to learn from everyone. And I think it's, you miss out if on a lot of good things if you just put yourself in a one place and one perspective and not learn from others.
I love that. My dad's going to love that too. Another thing I'm interested in, and I had a former client who was into martial arts and he was in the startup scene. And he was talking about applying what you learn in martial arts because some things click and some techniques and principles you have to do again and again again until you're like, oh, now it's smooth.
You know, Rina, just like everything else in life, when we learn, I always say like when you learn when he got on the bike the first time, or when he learned how to drive. Like, well, my kids, when they start to, you know, later say, oh yeah, we learned how to drive when we were very young. I said, yeah, let me remind you when you were so nervous. So same thing in business, same thing in anything, like martial arts. Actually, last night I was training and then we have a new gentleman who came in and he had a lot of questions and like, he's very nervous. And I said, just remember the first time you got on the bike, it wasn't easy. Or the first time you had your hands on the steering wheel, like you were probably very stiff, very focused. You didn't even, you know, move your hand to turn on the radio because we're just so focused on so that's, I think in business, the first time you pitch, you can be very, very stiff. You're going to be very nervous. They're going to feel it. But if you don't do that, you know, if you don't get to that 10,000 hours of that deliberate practice, I think Carol Dweck talked about that in her book Mindset. And then others, they made this more popular. But yeah, you got to put in the hours. And I think it's part of entrepreneurship, part of life. You want to be good at something. You're very good at podcasting because you've been doing podcasting for a long time. I'm pretty sure, I didn't listen to your first podcast, but I'm pretty sure it didn't go as smoothly as the ones you do now, right? So.
Oh yeah, it takes a while to get comfortable on the camera, on the mic, where you don't even feel like it's on, right? Actually, I know that you just did a podcast on kind of your YouTube journey and niching down there and applying some of your digital experience to your YouTube channel. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So when we started, my partner and I, Eric, decided to build this brand, the startup with Ferris. So we have the website and we have the YouTube channel. I mean, obviously I know about YouTube. I don't know about digital marketing, but this whole creator economy thing is totally new to me. And after all these years in business and 7 ventures, we'll figure it out. I'm telling you, Rena, YouTube is hard. YouTube is really hard. And a lot of big YouTubers, in a way, they make it sound easier than it is. But I think the good ones, they tell you, I think Mr. B said, my first 500 videos sucked. Like another guy, I'm trying to remember his name now. He said, for 2 years, we're dropping a video or two every week. And then for 2 years, no traction. Now he has 4.7 million followers or something. So YouTube, if you want to be in the creator economy, even if it's an education, it is hard because there's a lot of competition. And plus, there is so many pieces to it in terms of the content, in terms of the delivery, in terms of just the way you tell a story, and then the lights and the sound and the video and all that research you have to do. So this is me reinventing myself, as the saying goes, after all these businesses. Oh my God, what did I get myself into? But we're loving this. We're getting a lot of good feedback from the community. We're building this community and helping founders either start a business if they've been thinking about it and they're not sure how, or if they started and they're struggling. So we have that content, and it's always amazing to hear, you know, good feedback that we're able to help someone just avoid a few mistakes I made that makes my day every day.
I love that. Do you want to talk about some of those stories, or even maybe how you've applied that to helping your own children or your own family?
Yeah, children don't listen to you, you know. As they get older, mine are older than yours, Rena. So as they get older.
But you do feel their pain, and you want to try to point them in the right direction.
One wise person said, you know, you guide, you share your thoughts, and you just leave it at that, because they're not going to change until they want to change. So, and sometimes as parents, we could be overprotective, we could be overthinking this. You know, you got to give them their space as well. But I mean, in terms of stories, I highlight the need. Like, if you're starting a business, you set a goal. Do you want to be just a solopreneur? Are you just doing some freelancing to have some of the extra income on the side? That's one thing. If you want to be a solopreneur, you don't want to have a business and employees and grow, that's fine. So no, but if you want to be, you want to build a business and grow it to 7 or 8 figures, that's a different path. You need different resources, different mindset. And I think that clarity will help you then understand what it takes and be ready for it. So I think a lot of it is you need the skills, of course. You need the technical skills. You need the whatever you're providing a service around or product around. You need the soft skills, you know, communication, listening, how to talk to people, how to pitch, maybe how to write if you're into content marketing. But then you need that mindset, because you got to take some risks. You're going to fall. You're going to make mistakes. You are going to have to get up after you fall. you're going to pivot. I mean, these are not ifs. This is just business in general, especially in early stage. The idea of like learning, being a sponge, especially if you're older, like you're set on your ways. So though the mindset is, I think, where a lot of folks, you know, struggle with. So set, understand what you want to do. Talk to a bunch of people that you respect and they have tasted success, and then build your own plan and then work hard towards those goals. And you're likely, there's no guarantees. There are no guarantees, but you're more likely to succeed if you do all the above. Know what you want to do, talk to others, and then just work hard and have that right mindset.
Did you know you wanted to be a 7-8-figure entrepreneur?
So I live in Silicon Valley and you hear all these stories about companies. Short answer is yes, at one level. But when and how, and is it just a dream? Like those, not doubts, but those thoughts always come to your mind. When you start, we didn't have any sales for a few weeks, as I said earlier. And then once you start to sell, oh, yeah, okay, I can do this. And once you start to get larger clients, larger projects, okay, now you start to hire. I mean, that's why my partner, I wanted to build a business and hire. And then you struggle with hiring and you hire the wrong person. And that's another episode altogether on hiring. But once you see it working, and I think you see it's more achievable. It's a dream that I can achieve because now you're making progress. So you went from maybe like selling at $50,000 the first year to maybe tripling that the next year. Okay, now I can build on that. I can scale that. But you always have to be learning because what works for you when yourself and your business partner is not going to work when you have 10 people. And what works when you have 10 people, it's not going to work when you have 20 people. So the ability to, and then the right talent and updating your processes and being a better manager. There's a lot of founders, they want to do it themselves. They can't delegate. No one can do it as good as I can. If you have that mindset, then you'd better stay as a solopreneur. So those are things, I think the dream becomes, you can sort of is within reach after you have some success. You can see, okay, it's not just me daydreaming. I can get there because I've made some progress year over year.
But also success isn't linear. Like what if you have like three $50,000 years in a row? And you're like, is this even scalable?
Then you have to have those three questions, double down, pivot, or you know, call it quits. So yeah, those are real decisions. If you're stagnating and you try different things and maybe you're in the declining industry or in a vertical, it could be that you're not learning new things. If what's the definition of insanity? You keep doing the same thing and expect different results. So you have to examine, like at the end of the year, you know, big companies, they do quarterly reviews and quarterly goal assessment. So you got to do the same thing as a business owner every quarter. Okay, what worked? What didn't? How can I automate things? How can I make things more efficient? What do I do next time? So like customers are not happy. I mean, you have to do all of these things that big companies do. I think you can scale down and do for your small business without having to hire strategic consultants. A lot of the stuff is on YouTube. And so I think it's, you have to assess where you are and see how far you are from your goal and how you adjust.
Yeah, that's a good answer. And also I'm curious too, did you ever think that, okay, I'm going to be an entrepreneur and this is going to be it? Were you ever considering going back to corporate? Because I feel like there's a tug there for entrepreneurs that have done well in the corporate world too, to get those golden handcuffs again.
Yeah, I know friends who've done that. And I think that enriches their career if they go back to corporate or work in a company. Because as an entrepreneur, you end up knowing a ton of things about, you learn a lot about many things, every aspect of the business. But for me, the first year or so when things were not going well, where cash was tight, where we were working really, really hard, long hours and figuring out like networking, going to walking down exhibit halls and talking to each vendor and going to all these breakfast events, early breakfast things that I don't like to have an early breakfast, but I was at those 7 a.m. networking events because that's where potential leads are. So oh man, did I make the right decision? Should I go back? You know, economy has improved. There are opportunities. Sometimes someone calls, hey, Ferris, you want to come back? And, you know, some of my ex-colleagues, you know, work now in different companies and they have openings. So I was having those thoughts initially when we were struggling, but as we started to sell more and get larger projects, I don't quit easily. I'm maybe sometimes too stubborn for my own benefit. So, you know, we said, and we hired a couple of people. So now it's an obligation. I got to make it work. It's not just me. These people that we've hired, we got to make sure this thing works. So just a little bit of a hesitation, maybe the first year or so, but then just 100% focused, dedicated, working hard. And it worked out really well for us. So very, very fortunate.
Yeah. Back to the whole like layoff conversation, and you know it well, and you did the networking, you know, morning coffees and exhibit halls and all of these things that we're supposed to do to try to figure ourselves out and our identity and what we want to do with our lives. Did you make a one-page resume? Did you make a two-page resume? Did you tailor them? I mean...
No, I had different copy, different versions, and I kept it to one page. I think that was sort of the standard at the time. I tell folks today, actually, just young folks just finishing college, they reach out every once in a while. And I say, it's looking for a job is a full-time job. So I spoke with someone just a couple of weeks ago. He said, I know his family. I said, so how many hours a day are you spending looking for a job? He said, yeah, about an hour a day. Okay, well, you're going to get your job in 2025. He was like, talk to the system. I said, dude, I care for you. That's why I'm giving you, you know, if you want to get a job in the next couple of months, you got to be spending 6-7 hours every day researching, build your own spreadsheet, look around who has opening, check with your family members, your family friends, like what company. You got to hustle. And how do you stand out? And how do you get more interviews? You know, if you're looking for a job, the first thing is to get interviews. Once you get the interviews, then you can think about what to do in the interview. So it's hard. And when we have all these layoffs, it's not easy for the younger crowd now. I mean, even for everyone, even if you're older, it might be even be tougher, because if you're just finishing college, some companies might want to hire you because you're less expensive. So it might be better for the younger crowd who are just graduating. It might be tougher for those of us who maybe have 15 years, 20 years under our belt. And, you know, we were used to a certain, you know, income. It might be difficult these days to find the same type of, you know, type of job. So I think at the end of the day, if you happen to find yourself in a layoff situation, you know, assess. This is a good time to assess. And if you had a good manager, get the last performance review and see where you scored high. Those are your skills. You want to maintain, improve, keep on those. And then what areas of improvement did they, you know, identify and work on those? And then you have those skills. No one's going to take those skills away from you. And a lot of those skills could be transferable. So when we started our first business, I was used to working with C-level, Fortune 500. All of a sudden, I'm now pitching to small business owners, to local restaurants and local dentists and those sort of things. So how do you adopt? So one common feedback we got from all the leads and all the customers, my co-founder and I said, you guys are very, very professional. So we brought that professionalism that we learned from working Fortune 500s to the local business owners, and no one else was doing that. So that compensated for our lack of experience and lack of years in business. So look at the skills that you have and see how you can, you know, in most cases, they're very transferable to other things. So if you're stuck in a specific sector, maybe look at areas of sustainability. That would be, if you like services, elderly care, elderly home care. I was just reading a report the other day. It's going to have the largest growth over the next decade. So I think 22% growth year over year. And there's a shortage, you know. So look at your skills and look at industries that are growing and see how you can potentially find something in that area. You might have to get a new certification. You might have to read on your own to learn about that industry. You have time. So spend it looking for a job, or maybe, again, evaluate starting your own business.
Okay, this is the final question, but it kind of goes along with that. Before you have a customer or you've had customers, like, what do? Create a business card and you're like, well, here's all the awesome companies I've worked for.
So those are really hard questions. Like, so how many customers do you have? How long have you been in business? What other customers have you used?
Well, let's talk about the problem I see.
I mean, those, when people ask, I mean, you just, I don't know. I don't have any other customers. So you learn. And what I just had a video on handling objections. And basically, every time you have an objection that you just did a terrible job answering, when you go back home that same day or on the way back, record it, like hear what they asked me, and then find an answer and practice it 10 times. So now it's like a list of FAQs in your mind. So you know what works? Because people buy from people. So when you go to pitch your service, if you're new, you don't have customers, just let them know about what you've achieved in your life. Like, for example, even like let them know that you're certified in X, Y, and Z. Let them know that you've put money into this business and you're very passionate about helping others. You know, look them in the eye and let them know that you will take care of them. So I think not everybody's going to buy from you. And initially you're looking for a customer or two anyhow. And once you have those one or two customers, then you can obviously tell their stories to others, right? But initially, work with what you have and just let people know that, hey, I'm starting this. I'm putting all my energy into it. I want to serve you. Because I don't have a lot of customers, I'm going to give you all my attention. So you have to turn something.
That's a great spin. I love that. That's good.
And do that and make sure they bend over backward for these early customers. And then they'll tell their friends, word of mouth is a thing, and you'll get customers, and then they can be your references. So
that is gold. That is really good. I love that line. Thank you so much, Ferris. This has been so much fun. Do you have any questions for my dad?
Yes, I do. What's his advice to people who have had a successful career or now they're pivoting? So like mid-career or even late career, what advice does he have for them? I'd love to hear his perspective on that. I could ask him a lot of things about Rena and maybe someone, let us know, tell us some things about Rena. But no, we'll keep that for another discussion.
What's funny is if it were somebody in his family, I think it would be different than just, you know, somebody who's generally asking the question.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that's a great question. Let people know how they can buy your book, find your YouTube channel, support you, connect with you, all the good stuff.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, so we have our Startup with Ferris, and Ferris spelled FERAS.com. We have a daily newsletter, the Daily Advisor. Please sign up. It's tips and strategies on how to build and grow your business to be 6, 7, or 8 figures. And then we have the YouTube channel, youtube.com/Startup with Ferris, again, FERAS. So a lot of content. We have over 200 videos on things, vetting your business idea, business planning, working with attorneys, working with accountants, marketing, sales. And we'd love to hear from you. Just let us know if you have any specific questions. I do have a weekly live stream every Wednesday where we cover a business topic around entrepreneurship, and then we answer the questions that come our way.
Amazing. Well, keep up the good work, and I can't wait to hear what my dad has to say.
You've heard from my mom. Now, let's switch it over to Grandpa.
All right. Well, Ferris gives you some insight to what it is to get laid off or lose your job when you're a big wig at a startup. And even your husband has some experience of how fast a startup can go down the drain. And I think that before we touch upon his question, is that when you have venture capitalists pouring in money because you have a great idea, or you're building a new system, or you're building a new product, or you're trying to rush a product to the market and you want to do it in scale, and you just go gangbusters. However, what can happen is things can go wrong. And when you burn through a lot of money because money is not an issue, and this is the same for other people that inherit money or have very well-to-do parents and they hand money to their children through some type of inheritance, or just where they help them out because they want to start a business because they believe in their children and they want to give them an opportunity to make something out of themselves. And what they don't realize is that when you flood the system with money, you don't necessarily then have a respect for the money, because people that have done it the hard way of scratching and fighting for every inch of that money and have fallen on their ass a few times and have had to scrape to get money, it's a whole different philosophy. And sometimes it's better to be a little bit more conservative and really still watch every dollar on the cost side, not just on the inflow of money that's coming in. It's nice to have the sales. It's nice to have money coming in. But if you are spending more money than you're taking in, it's called a burn rate. And believe it or not, you can burn up all the money that's flooding in just as fast if you're not watching what you're doing. So watching those expenditures is a very important function of being in business, and respecting how difficult it is to make money. And to his question, Ferris says, well, what do? Especially if you're later in life and you lose your job, or they eliminate your job. It might not even be necessarily where you've done anything wrong, or they've moved the plant and closed the plant and moved it to Mexico, or closed up the shop and said they can't compete because the competition from Japan or Korea or China has just wiped out our industry, where we all have to go and outsource out of the country because we just can't compete. So then you say to yourself, my gosh, I've worked in this industry for 10 or 20 years, and now all of a sudden, I'm out of a job. Well, you have to work on the skills that you have, and you have to figure out if you're good in sales or if you're good at making things, that you have to learn how to make things for someone else, possibly. So I agree with Ferris, is that highlight what skills you do have and see if you can pivot and use those skills in either a different industry or in a different trade. If you're working for a pharmacy, like you know from your mom's side of the family, where just about everyone in her family is a pharmacist, and CVS closes down, well, there's Walgreens, there's Kroger's. They have a certain skill level that they keep up that they could work in any drugstore. As you know, your grandfather, Jacob, and his brother both had their own stores. But running your own store, and as time went on, they were in an economic pinch, they were able to pivot, both of them. One, and even Carol, who worked in the drugstore, also had her pharmacy. She was able to work in a hospital in the pharmacy department. And he ended up working for a couple of different drugstores, Taylor's, and then they went under or got bought out by someone else. He moved to another one. So when you have a certain amount of skill levels, you can sometimes use that in the same industry or in other industries. So you might have to change locations. You might have to change towns. If you're in the oil industry, something, a refinery, they close one up, you hopefully can take your skills in a similar field. But if you don't have that, then you have to say, hey, maybe I got to go back to school or take certain courses or hustle and network with people that will give you an opportunity to develop into a new position. If you've been in a management position, it's very clear that your management skills can also be applicable to many different industries. You might be a vice president of operations for one company, but you could pivot and maybe use your skills to be a vice president of another operation. But you might have to tone up some of your skill levels. But you have to be able to go out there. You have to show that you're hungry and that you're willing to do whatever it takes, whatever hours or whatever things that might take that you're short on to improve upon to get another job. There's some people that if they're making a certain amount of money, they knock themselves out of the marketplace because they don't want to ever work for less. So what do? Well, then you've got to either open up your own business and slave at that, or you have to be able to swallow your pride a little bit and be willing to take less. And hopefully, if you're able to show your new boss that you have skills that you can graduate to a higher level, if they'll give you an opportunity or a chance. But no matter what they give you, you have to always do your best. And I hope that there's room to be rewarded if you're able to show that you have outstanding skills, that in their organization, that there's a growth opportunity. Some people would rather wait a little bit before they just take anything, because finding another opportunity where you can grow back to at least the level that you're at is not always easy to find if you're at a very high level. Now, what did Ferris do? He took all of his skills and networking and saw what failures he put in, many, many, many hours learning hands-on the operations of the organization he worked for. And then he understood, no hard feelings. When you're working at these big companies, loyalty is not always at the forefront. But he learned these skills and says, hey, you know, I can help myself
And I can help others that are going through something similarly by showing that we can build on our skill levels and that if we are determined to go out there, that we can turn it around. We can continue to move forward. And that is the answer. The answer is that you can't stay still. You have to not only go out there, but you got to make it also like that's your new full-time job. I love what Ferris said, is that even if you don't have a job, going out to get another job, you have to do it just like it's a full-time job as well. So I really thought this was a very good interview of how you have to have encouragement and be, but you have to be motivated. You've got to still be able to say, no matter what happens, that I'm going to go out there and rebuild my life and take the experiences that I have and still be in a forward motion like nothing ever happened. Even though you might get a stomach ache and want to vomit when it happens, when you lose your job, but you have to be able to recover and be able to pivot and say, hey, disasters can occur at any time in our lives. That doesn't mean our life should end. We should still give every bit of breathing room that we have on this earth to try to look forward to doing something better. And that's, I think, the lesson for all of us.
Thanks for listening. Now I think I'm going to go call my dad.
I'll say goodbye and see you the next time.
Thanks for listening to the Better Call Daddy Show. Join us weekly for new episodes and more daddy wisdom.
Better Call Daddy is good advice always.
Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. You can also find special episodes on my YouTube channel, and you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Amazon Music, Alexa, or your preferred podcatcher. That's a wrap for now.